Greetings, Alpha Seekers. We're going to do our usual weekly review of the week for Nugent Ventures. Week magazine, that is. The best of U.S. and international media. Highly recommended. So, independent of all that, the thought occurred to me today that one way to view this world that we live in is that the problem is we don't have enough control over our environment. And that is manifest in the pandemic in terms of the biome and also in regard to the climate. And the climate always changes, but we can't really control how it changes, except inadvertently, as perhaps a side effect of industrialization, we've perhaps changed the climate toward a global warming skew. And there was a time, unbeknownst to us, that apparently we had been engendering global cooling by blocking the sun with soot and other particulates. So, what to do? Well, you could argue this. That first of all, you got to get buy-in from all parties involved, right? And if you position it in a negative way, which is that, you know, man is the problem and we have to curtail what we do and restrict our freedoms and, you know, take an economic hit, that's not a good message for the conservative side of the equation. But what is a good message, you know, and this is my Norman heritage to a certain extent, is that we don't have sufficient control over our domain. So we need to tame the forces of nature and protect ourselves against the forces of nature. And that's a lot better message to people who are afraid, you know, which I think most conservatives really are. And I was thinking about this, you know, I was abused as a child, but not by my parents or by teachers. I was abused by my classmates, my my friends. So I learned, you know, don't trust anybody because this guy could be your friend one minute, and next minute he could be holding you down and beating you up, you know, just for the fun of it. So, you know, people are mean, and kids are particularly mean, and I was kind of a nice kid. You know, I turned into a pretty curmudgeon-y adult, but you know, I didn't understand, so I was naive, but I got an education, and I think a lot of conservatives are kind of shaped that way. If you've been through what we used to call neighborhood change, then you learn not to trust people who are newcomers to your neighborhood, because they may end up driving you out, you know, or you may perceive it to be that way, let's put it politely. So, you have to learn to appeal to those folks. And if you appeal to the people on the conservative side by saying, hey, look, you know, this earth is out to get us and we got to do something about it, well, then maybe you can convince them to wear things to protect themselves, you know, like N95 masks and such. And you can persuade them to develop things like wind power and such, to protect us from the ills that we are unleashing upon ourselves. We may be our own worst enemy, everybody is, but, you know, if you say, hey, other people's exhaust is threatening you. So anyway, that's my thought of the day for a new messaging for the for all the folks in leadership and politics and all that. Now, the editor, I'm going to lead off with the editor's letter, as they do, and they categorize Trump's presidency as an accident of history, and I would definitely say that. I would certainly think, it says, on election night, Donald Trump's victory came as a shock even to him. Steve Bannon says that Trump was speechless and horrified. Don Jr. said his father looked like he'd seen a ghost. Melania was crying, and they were not tears of joy. Michael Cohen, who I don't necessarily trust, said that his longtime boss told him the presidential run would serve as the greatest infomercial in political history, a way of promoting his real estate and reality TV brand. And in reality, he ended up destroying his brand, as the article ends up by saying. I actually believe that's true. I had never seen anything that was plausible that supported that, but I'm sure he, I know I was shocked when he won. I think everybody was shocked when he won. And he pretended he wasn't, but I really didn't, I don't think he even expected to get the nomination, much less win the election. So, anyway, what does that tell you? I mean, what that tells you about the American body politic is that it is not buying entirely what the progressives are selling. You know, if somebody, an accidental figure like that, can stumble into the White House as his supporter stumbled in toward the end of the whole sorry saga, that's telling you that there's no, certainly no consensus in this country over the progressive agenda. So that's just what it is, you know, that's a data point. So you got to deal with that. Next article about Joe Biden. The Wall Street Journal, of course, says that what he needs to do is guard against the temptation of the left wing to use government as a battering ram to drive economic and cultural transformation, quote unquote. To succeed in healing divisions, Biden must tune them out and not use the rhetoric of crisis to pursue radical change. Radical change is generally never a very good way to do change. It's better to do things incrementally. And that comes to price increases and everything else. So will they listen to that? Probably not, in my opinion. I mean, you got Bernie Sanders as chairman of the Senate Finance, you know. But I think that's where Biden wants to go. Biden wants to govern from the middle. He's not a revolutionary. He's a centrist. So I hope he's able to rein in the left. You know, it's kind of like Ben-Hur. You got to rein in the horse on the left and the horse on the right and go down the middle. So hopefully that's what will happen. Biden could be a transformative president, says Seth Cutler in USA Today, but he first must overcome Americans' anti-government cynicism. The New Deal belief in the federal government as a positive force in American lives hit a brick wall in the Reagan years. And that was after the 60s and 70s when a lot of well-meaning federal programs basically tore the country to pieces. But after, and they went too far left. But after suffering through a pandemic worsened by federal inaction and ineptitude, the public may be ready for a more proactive federal government. In other words, the pendulum is swinging back. And I think that's true. You know, when 400 plus thousand people die because of a public health crisis, that is definitely going to give you a mindset change and a mandate. Now, everybody agrees the United States federal government ought to handle defense, right? So in my mind, public health is yet another front on national defense. And again, if you position it that way, you know, it becomes easier to do the Medicare for all thing and have a common database. I mean, I think more and more rational people are starting to see the light, if you will, on that. It's not perfect, but, you know, in my mind, if you do it the way the UK does, where you've got private insurance and private providers, and that's an option for people who have money to buy it and inclination. But you have a basic public service that takes care of things like, you know, like defense or police or fire. Nobody objects to that. And health is kind of in that same thing. As long as you, you know, cosmetic surgery, forget about it. So anyway, a primary goal will be establishing scientific integrity in federal decision-making and quantifying the high-cost carbon dioxide emissions imposed on society to make regulations more economically appealing. Well, that's part of what I'm talking about here. You know, they stopped the Keystone Pipeline. They sure as heck better put those pipe fitters to work, you know, making windmills or something. Because I saw that out on social today, and it's a, you know, there's trade-offs. If you stop doing carbon, you're going to put a lot of people out of work. Well, you better put them back to work building windmills or whatever it is. They also talk about the Dreamer thing and the immigration thing. They refer to 11 million illegal immigrants, which is not that politically correct. They're undocumented. And, you know, I've never been a hawk on that. Obviously, if you're going to have a country, you have to have citizens. And if you have citizens, then you're going to have to distinguish between citizens and non-citizens. But that problem has kind of solved itself. No thanks really to the wall. But COVID turns out to be better deterrent to immigration. I talked to somebody in Mexico today, and she said that, you know, nobody wants to go to the United States because Mexico is safer from COVID than the United States. At least that's their perception. So there's like an invisible wall. Plus, there's no jobs, you know, because of COVID, right? So COVID's been great. So ironically, you know, under Trump, we did reduce immigration, but not the way he thought. So here's another thing. You're talking about the vaccine distribution and why it's so slow. And there's burdensome, according to National Review, which is conservative, burdensome rules, who is eligible, which doctors can give it out and which can't. States are debating whether to prioritize at-risk employees and then people of color versus the old bureaucratic hurdles. And, of course, National Review says governors and the Biden administration should get out of the way. And it would be interesting if they handled the vaccine like they do everything else in the economy, mostly, which is to just let the private sector do it and price it however they want. Well, I'll bet you we'd have a lot more vaccines and a lot more arms. So when you take out the profit motive, then you get the for-profit segment of the economy involved, which is the government primarily. And having worked as a government employee for the census, I can tell you it's not the most efficient, effective entity. But you know, if you're going to do social equity and social justice and everything else, then, you know, that's where you end up. But there's a bigger problem, too, which is that 32% of Republicans 18 to 49 said they definitely will not get vaccinated. In Ohio, up to 60% of nursing home workers offered a vaccine refused it. So even if we had one dose for every citizen, you would have somewhere between, based on those numbers, a third and two-thirds not willing to take it. So I think you ought to mandate it. I think if you're a federal beneficiary in any way, Medicare, Medicaid, you know, SNAP, whatever, you either take the vaccine when it's offered to you or you forfeit your benefits. I don't think we'll see Joe doing that. And I think employers ought to mandate it, and I think they ought to get a liability shield. I don't think that's going to happen either, you know. So, in fact, you could authorize the trial bar to go after anybody who dies because an employer didn't mandate it. So, lots of ways to do that. I don't know that Joe will do any of them, but he could. And I do think Joe ought to pour more money, resources, whatever, Defense Production Act, into making N95s. I've got a KN95, which turns out to be the Chinese version. I don't exactly trust them. But it's all about trust, folks. Let's face it, the left doesn't trust the right. The rich don't trust the poor don't trust the rich. If we all trusted each other, we wouldn't need any laws if we were trustworthy. So, what else have we got here? Trump's thinking about forming a third party or a fifth party or whatever. Fifth column. called the Patriot Party. Now, if that works out the same way Trump University did, I don't know that that's a big issue for the Republicans. And post that little rebellion, I mean, anybody who joins the Patriot Party is going to have a tough time finding a job, you know, if it comes out that they're a member. So it's, and I hope that's the case with these Antifa people, but, you know, it'd be a good dumping ground for the Republicans, actually, because I doubt those folks would vote for, AOC. I imagine they'd probably end up voting for the GOP and the generals, and the Republicans could say, hey, they're not in our party. So, what else do we got here? Well, there's an article about psychedelics and therapy, which I plan on reading at length. Not that I'm going to take them, but there is some evidence that they're effective. Cary Grant took them, yeah. But if they were medically regulated and FDA approved, there is some evidence that they actually work. And we have a huge depression problem with COVID, so there's a two-page article in the week about that. So, again, I recommend these to you. A couple of articles, interesting. There was a welfare scandal in the Netherlands. And this is the theme of, you know, racism. Like 26,000 parents were falsely accused of fraudulently claiming child welfare. And there was a definite, I don't know if you want to call it racial or nationalist tinge to it. Dutch citizens with foreign-sounding names were singled out. So that goes to show you these socialist societies that have a very homogenous population are a lot more likely to accept a socialist type of a government because it's kind of family, you know. When people from other countries start coming in and taking advantage of it, even if they are citizens, you know, it's not just here where you get problems with that. So, and then in Canada, often lauded as superior to the U.S. in all ways, Canadians of color are disproportionately targeted and fined for COVID-related offenses. In Ontario, they declared a COVID lockdown that will be enforced by the cops. Anyone who leaves home for a non-essential activity can be fined thousands of dollars or face up to a year in prison. And then they didn't get very specific about what could get you in trouble. What's essential? What's not? So are we going to see that out of Biden? I don't know. And if, you know, the exemption would be that if you're a BIPOC, then you don't have to do it. So it's just for, you know, quote, white, unquote, people. I mean, that could get ugly. So I don't think he's going to do that. And if you're looking at things from a public health perspective, that's the thing to do. The other thing I pointed out to someone today, at least in my humble opinion, is that Biden's going to run into trouble with teachers. You know, the Chicago Teachers Union doesn't want to go back to school, and I understand why. You know, healthcare heroes are one thing, but educational heroes are harder to find, and to quote Christy McVie. But, you know, you've got a problem for Joe there because teaching unions are one of his core constituencies, and they basically, you know, they're the instrument of progressivism because they change the hearts and minds of the youth, and that's why you've got this woke millennial movement, which is the ultimate key for the progressives to win the war, which they're going to do, I think, probably faster than they would otherwise have. You know, the end of history in that regard is upon us. But he can't afford to lose them in many ways. You know, activism, donation, changing hearts and minds, you know, they're kind of the shock troops of the social justice revolution. And so when he says, we got to go back to school, you know, when he says jump, they are not going to say how high. What's he going to do? Put the teachers first or the students first? Good question. Big challenge. So there's fault lines on that side of the aisle is the point. There's an article in here, the debate within the Republican Party about whether or not to impeach Trump. And this is Kevin Williamson in the National Review. And there were a lot of never-Trumpers, by the way, in the Republican establishment. And he says that if it splits the country or the party over the impeachment, perhaps one of the surviving halves would be worth joining, worth voting for, and worth trusting. Republicans who are clinging to Trump are making a titanic mistake and I am rooting for the iceberg. Nicely turned phrase. For the good of the party and the country, Trumpism must go down with the ship. And he may help by starting his own party, you know, and that'll give it the Republicans an easy way to call people who join that party traitors to the grand old party and be done with them. So, and maybe Ted Cruz ends up there, you know, which would be fine with me. He'll probably caucus with the Republicans. As often, here's some quotes, as often as not, we are homesick most for the places we have never known. And I think in some cases, that's your own neighborhood, right? Like, I'm very nostalgic about South Shore, but, you know, if I was transported back there, it wasn't all steaks and cocktails. Let's put it that way. Of course, I was too young to drink. And then, similarly, Louise Gluck, who's a poet, Gluck, it's a U with an umlaut, as the German goes. We look at the world once in childhood, the rest is memory. And that's my point about conservatism. You know, I think a lot of conservatives were people who lived in fear as children and carried that over. You know, most of my progressive friends had very happy childhoods, it occurs to me. Wit and wisdom. Oh, wait, I already did that. So we move on. But I often do think psychologically, a psychological profile, the conservative versus the liberal. I think liberals had happier childhoods. That's my, maybe they didn't, I don't know. They're always complaining about their unhappy childhoods and poverty and all that. Snapchat has a teen named Cam Casey who had 7 million TikTok followers. So now he's on Snap. And he adds 120 videos a day and made $3 million in 3 months. So I guess the way you'd get one of his big viral videos was a science experiment with an exploding Coca-Cola bottle, which doesn't sound very safe if it was glass. So he's making $1 million a month. And I guess how you do it is you just do lots of shots on goal. Who knew? I was trying to figure out Citizen Kane for TikTok, but TikTok is a social media for those of you who don't follow the genre. Now, here's another thing. Technology. This is the technology page. Advertising right under your fingers. Your remote control has become the latest battleground in the streaming wars. I don't know about you, but I don't know how to watch any of this stuff. Netflix, I know I got a button on the remote. But if I don't have a button on the remote, like Roku and Hulu and, you know, I don't know how to watch any of this stuff. And it's not like I'm a guy who's, you know, not watching enough TV. I'm watching too much TV. So it's not like I'm going looking to spend money on this stuff or to spend time on TV. I mean, I get this thing on all day. But I'm watching CNBC, so you don't have to. So, but it just points out that the remote control is, you know, the most important 2x10 piece of real estate in the world right now. There's the thing about China sanctions creating a chip gap, and those of you who follow the stock market know that Intel is struggling because they can't make their own chips anymore, and that's what they do. So the auto industry is, you know, sucking up these chips like no tomorrow, and Huawei has been prevented from buying American chips, and then they stockpile them, so, the, you know, typical Chinese. But all these car companies rely on computer chips, and so there's a lot of demand and not enough supply. So that would indicate to me that the semiconductor ETF might be a buy, which I think is SMH, which doesn't stand for shake my head. It's the semiconductors. I think that's the symbol. So I don't know enough about tech to make that recommendation or that play, but that's it follows, you know. There is some evidence in health and science, evidence of long-lasting immunity, at least 8 months, and perhaps much longer, hopefully much longer, once you get it. So if you get it and you live through it and you're not crippled by it, then, you know, you're immune for at least 8 months. And I don't know what happens then. Hopefully you got the vax. But another thing about COVID, a small study has confirmed that an infusion of antibody-rich blood plasma can prevent some people from getting seriously ill with the disease. And Lilly came out with a drug this week that does the same thing. So, you know, all the focus is on this vaccine, but I think that Biden may want to try getting that stuff out there too, you know. I mean, they can print money, so money is no object for the feds, certainly. I got my 1,200, and I'm hoping for more, you know. One good thing about being married is you get twice as much. Under consumer, they have an app called Yak, Y-A-C, which lets you replace impersonal text messages with good old-fashioned voicemail on a phone, laptop, or desktop. You tap to record and send a voice clip. And each clip is also transcribed and made searchable. So we'll have to try that. I'm in the business of sending people messages to get them to do stuff. We call that marketing. So we'll try that, see if that works. Got to try everything, you know, multi-channel. Bill Gates, speaking of investments, this is business. Land. Bill Gates is now the top private farmland owner in America. He owns 242,000 acres in 18 states. Private farmland. John Malone is the country's biggest landowner with 2.2 million acres of ranches and forests. Jeff Bezos also into land, 420,000 acres. So, you know, if you're thinking about Bitcoin or gold, then think about land. I mean, land should be an inflation hedge. And maybe what we should do, you know, we got to back the dollar with something. We back it with the full faith and credit of the United States. Maybe we should back the dollar with dirt. Like, you know, every dollar is backed by a square foot of federal land. We got lots of land that is federal land. So, you know, ultimately, if we default on the debt or whatever, you know, they're not making any more land. It's the old real estate pitch. So maybe that's what you had the right to a square foot of land. I don't know. I'd rather do that than Bitcoin or gold, you know, because it is a finite quantity. In 2015, Americans spent $14 billion more on their pets than on alcohol, $90 billion versus $77 billion. So people are substituting pets for getting drunk, which is probably good. They both make you feel good, and, you know, you do get addicted to them, but, you know, it doesn't ruin your liver. So what does that tell you? Short alcohol, long pets. Petco, there's other veterinary stocks. We should act on that. 29% of investors with $1 million or more in the market think that it's in a bubblicious state or is approaching it. And 18% more thinks we're there. So that's 39, 40, so almost half. But 60% expect it to go up from here. So it's a momentum market. The Postal Service should be a beneficiary of Biden because 64% of first-class mail got there on time, which means the other 36% didn't, which is not a good on-time delivery number. And they had gotten pretty good at that, but then I think Trump kind of just slowed it down because of mail-in balloting. I really believe that now. Only one-tenth of marketing materials and periodicals arrived on time in some parts of the country. And I know our mail's been slow. Now, the National Labor Relations Board just authorized mail-in balloting for unionization of a Amazon plant in Bessemer, Alabama. So I put a post out there that said, on Facebook, I made the point that there are two things that you can use to destroy tech. And antitrust, you know, is slow and probably actually increases shareholder value. We can't have that in the new equity society. And by equity, I don't mean like you mean equities for stocks. I mean equity as in everybody is equal in all ways, including net worth. So there's two ways you get there. Number one is unions, and number two is trial lawyers. I mean, you can destroy any economy with the combination of those two. So with the social media, if you revoke Section 230, which is their liability shield, they're out of business in terms of, you know, timelines and QAnons, all that. And if you unionize their workforces, then, you know, they're not going to move fast and break things. They're going to move slow and invoke work rules. So you can kill them. Just kill them. Now, the trouble is, when you do that, you throw the proverbial baby out with the bathwater. So I hope they don't do that. I don't know that they won't, because this new world we're moving into is a very union world and is a very litigious world. So could happen. Happened before. That's one of the reasons we lost the steel industry. They'll never admit it, but it's true. So, and I think Biden, I mentioned this before, should put a liability shield in. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is the arbiter of such things, says that workplaces can mandate the vaccine just as they did with the swine flu vaccine, as long as some exemptions are included. And I saw one of the Kennedys today talking about, you know, oh my God, we've got these deaths from the vaccine, and he's setting them up for a lawsuit. You know, he's involved with the Roundup lawsuit, and, you know, he is widely pilloried, but is Twitter going to take him off? If his name was Trump, they would, but if his name is Kennedy, probably not so much. So they say here, a bevy of lawsuits would accompany any decision by a private sector company to mandate the vaccine. So if Joe's really serious about this, he should give people a liability shield. And he's going to tick off another one of his big constituencies, the trial lawyers. So the faults in that side of the equation are going to pretty soon not compute. They talk about the Russian doll arrangement, which is where, like in emergency rooms, all the staffing is done by outsourced companies, contract ER companies. And they also outsource a lot of the maintenance and everything else. And it's not just hospitals. A lot of companies do this, hotels and such. And it reduces their costs, and it also gets them off the hook for being criticized for, you know, not treating employees properly. Because they're like, hey, look, it's a vendor. What are we going to do about it? Same thing Apple does with manufacturing and a lot of other folks. So no particular comment there. That's just the thing. Another guy here, Paul Brown in the New York Times, writes that he only looks at his investments twice a year. And the reason is when he thinks about his father's approach to financial planning, he realizes what he was doing was essentially gambling. And honestly, that's what active investing is. It's, you know, gambling, which is why I say that now some gamblers win money. And, you know, at Nugent Ventures, that's what we try to do. You know, you are placing a bet, and insurance is a bet, you know. It's if you're making the odds right, then the insurance companies win almost all the time, but not every time. Their actuarial prowess and their data is what makes them winners. So, you know, when you pay premiums, you're essentially betting against the insurance company, and they have all the advantages. So your premiums are a wager. But that's life, right? Because nothing is certain. So, but I do agree with him that, you know, most of us, and I do this with most of my money, is I give it to somebody who knows what they're doing and is dispassionate, and I let them do their thing, and I hope for the best and, you know, guard against the worst. So I agree. Now, here's fund, Renaissance Technologies, had a medallion fund, average annual return of 40% after fees, 66% before fees, without a single money losing year for what? 30 years, 88, 98, 2008, 2018, 30 years. Yep. That is phenomenal. So there's somebody who beat the house for 30 years straight, beat the market. And it's the most successful quant hedge fund in history. And most people can't do that because it doesn't scale their strategy. It's been closed for years. They have other funds at Renaissance, but and they're probably not open to the public, but, the other funds can't hit those numbers. But they could, and $10 billion is a lot more money than Nugent Ventures is investing, I'll tell you that. So it can be done, and that's what we're trying to do, folks, and we hope that we will succeed. And if you want to go along on that ride, we're still doing that 10-10-10 deal, and you're more than welcome to join us. Just ring me up at 708-334-8414. Now, let's see how much time we've consumed here. Time is money, after all. And I have work to do, actually. So, 36 minutes. So, I will go on and briefly talk about what's out on the exciting Nugent Ventures LinkedIn page. Or what have I been telling you lately? Yeah, here's my post. Unions and trial lawyers are the antidotes to social media and deflation. If you want inflation, all you need to do is unionize everybody and get the trial lawyers unshackled. And, man, you'll see prices go up 10% a year before you know it. So, you can read that, and that's actually a finance. How we can save the internet without destroying Section 230, and it's right there. So, getting your stock picks from podcasts. There are a couple of podcasts that are recommended there that compete with me, but, you know, they're crushing me already, so what do I care? No, actually, I recommend everything that I think is worthy of your information menu. Another article, Biden has a chance to reshape tech. Will he? Might want to take a look at that. I won't go into it. And Trading Diary, new feature. We sold an Aridia put spread, planning to do the same for GM based on the fact that the market has obviously realized, duh, Tesla isn't the only company that makes cars, and GM is another one, and Ford's another one. You may have heard of them, and they make electric cars too. So, and they're tons bigger than Tesla, yet they trade for, you know, Tesla's market cap is bigger than all the major car companies combined because Tesla, you know. It's a pure play, okay, but that doesn't mean they're bigger than the entire auto industry. So, and that's it. So, I don't know if we put on, I don't think we put on the GM and GameStop. And, you know, I make these recommendations to my partner. He tells me he's going to do it. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes he looks at the chain and says, nah, you're not going to do that. And the GameStop, that's because there was a short squeeze, and it got real hairy. Some short seller came out and said it should be a $20 stock, and evidently there's a lot of nuts. Well, I would call them nuts. They're gamers and Game Boys, and they go out there, and they were threatening this guy and, you know, doxing him, which means they give out his address and his phone number. So he said, I'm not going to short this anymore because I'm scared. So, you know, it's kind of like getting canceled on social media for political suppression reasons. So he had to back off and the stock shot up. I guess all these guys went out and bought it on Robinhood or whatever. So you figure you know, selling puts at where it was before this guy came out with that short recommendation is probably a pretty good bet. And the premiums are real high because it's had so much volatility is what I'm hoping at least. So we'll do that if my partner actually finds it to be consistent with my hypothesis when he looks at the actual charts, the options chain, as we call it. So anyway, that's what's going on there. And we'll let you know how we do, as we always do. You know, we're not always right, but we're always transparent. So anyway, that's about it. And Star Trek's on, so I'm going to watch that. So live long and prosper, as Mr. Spock says every episode. And so do I. And stay safe. Bye-bye.